This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Thanks. Good afternoon, everybody. As you know, we're focusing today on proposals for a tax repatriation holiday for multinational corporations, an issue that clearly is heating up in the news. Earlier this week, Chairman Carl Levin reduced a major report bearing on this. We issued a major analysis yesterday that I think you all have and you can find on our website. The issue, of course, is that U.S.-based multinationals have very large profits. They've kept overseas in recent years, in substantial part because as long as their profits are overseas, they don't have to pay U.S. corporate tax on them. Repatriation, sometimes known as a corporate tax holiday, would let them return these overseas profits and pay tax at a sharply reduced rate rather than at the normal tax rate. An idea predicated on the idea of either an explicit or an implicit deal that the corporations would use the money they bring back to create jobs here at home. And with unemployment at 9%, that's tempting for a number of members of Congress who want to show they're doing something to try to create jobs. As you'll hear today, Congress tried to do this before in 2004 with the same goal in mind. And virtually every disinterested analysis finds that what happened in 2004 was a very large failure. The corporations not only didn't use the money to create significant numbers of jobs, in many cases they actually laid off more workers, even as they were bringing many billions of dollars back from overseas. As you'll hear today, most analysis concludes that a second repatriation holiday, by making this look like a regular pattern rather than a one-time only event, not only wouldn't work any better than the first time, but would create new problems by creating new incentives for corporations to place more investment and create more jobs overseas and to use various tax accounting techniques to book more income in tax haven countries and hold it there till the next repatriation holiday came along. And last but hardly least, it would add tens of billions of dollars to budget deficits. So this seems to lead to the conclusion it's the wrong proposal at the wrong time under the wrong circumstances. Here to help us delve into this more, I'm very pleased to say, are Ed Kleinbard and Chuck Maher. Ed Kleinbard is currently professor of law at the University of Southern California. He is the former chief of staff of the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation, and before that had 30 years of direct experience working on these very kinds of issues for one of the leading international corporate law firms in the country. He is also the author of a very important piece that came out last month in Tax Notes on stateless income, about which you'll hear more in a minute. And we'll be happy to forward to all of you. We're going to hear first from Ed, and then we're going to hear from Chuck Maher, Director of Federal Tax Policy here at the Center, and one of the authors of the paper we posted yesterday. Then we'll go to your questions. First to Ed Kleinbard.
Bob, thanks very much. You know what, in the few minutes that I'm going to spend, I want to begin by clarifying one point, and then moving to some of the consequences of repatriation holidays. The first is the relationship between a repatriation holiday and calls for the United States to adopt a territorial tax system. The two themes are related because they both go to the idea that earnings that are booked outside the United States should now come back to the United States without any additional U.S. tax. You can view a territorial system as a repatriation holiday on steroids. It's sort of a permanent repatriation holiday, and that's the sense in which they're related. But looking at it from the other direction, the call today for a repatriation holiday really operates as a call for the adoption, in my view, of a thoughtless territorial tax system. That is one that is not designed to protect the U.S. tax base, but rather a sort of Wild West kind of a tax system where anything goes, because the consequence of adopting a repatriation holiday today will be to incentivize U.S. firms to believe that there will be a repatriation holiday Part 3 and Part 4 and Part 5 ad infinitum, and as a result, they will change their behavior even more than they already have. One of the themes that will come out this afternoon from your point of view is that all of the studies that have been done are consistent with the view that firms do change behavior and have changed behavior in anticipation of this holiday, and in doing so have reduced substantially the U.S. corporate tax base today. So repatriation holiday, obviously the economy is in terrible shape. Surely it must be a good idea to take what is estimated at about $1.4 trillion of earnings outside the United States and bring those earnings back. This theme is often expressed as the idea that repatriation will take money that is trapped outside the United States today and put it to work in the United States, sort of like opening the door to let the puppy in out of the rain. The poor dollars will come back and find a warm home here in the U.S. And that's just, in my view, largely untrue. The money is not today buried in a backyard in Zug. To the extent the money is held in liquid investment assets, and a lot of the $1.4 trillion of earnings is, a very large portion of those assets, in turn, are U.S. dollar assets, because the ultimate owners, the U.S. corporations, are themselves U.S. dollar functional currency firms for financial accounting and tax purposes. So what that means is that a large portion of the liquid assets are held in U.S. bank deposits, U.S. commercial paper, U.S. government securities, and the debt obligations of other U.S. firms. So the money, in fact, to that extent, is already in the United States economy. The route is a little bit indirect, but it's already here and working for all of us collectively. A second theme that you hear sometimes is that a number of firms would make investments if only they had the money, that they are cash constrained. And there, I find it very difficult to come up with a list of cash-constrained American firms that nonetheless have large offshore pots of unrepatriated earnings. Tom Brennan, in his academic analysis of the 2004 holiday, concluded that 73 firms accounted for 79% of all the repatriations that came back. This is an extremely concentrated group of firms that we're looking at. And those firms are essentially the largest are General Electric, the pharmaceuticals, and the tech firms. Without exception, those firms have tremendous financial resources in the United States in the form of cash in the United States, and in borrowing capacity at the lowest rates in decades in the capital markets. So a cash-constrained story is very, very difficult one to actually construct. And I therefore reject both the cash-constrained story and the open the door and let the wet puppy in from the rain story. So why then, if neither of those stories is terribly convincing, why do firms are they pushing so hard for repatriation? And again, there's about $1.4 trillion of offshore earnings here at stake. And I think the reasons, very quickly, are three. The first is that they want to boost their stock prices. It's absolutely clear that's what happened with the money in 2004. If the bulk of it went to stock dividends and stock buybacks, it's absolutely clear that's what would happen again. yes, there would be some consumption pickup from at the shareholder level, who suddenly feels richer as a result of getting a big check. But that has to be weighed against the revenue cost of $80 billion or more of lost government revenues in figuring out what it would mean for the government. Second reason is, frankly, that firms are terrified that if that money is left in inside their corporations, but outside the United States, until fundamental corporate reform happens, then Congress will rightly see that pot of money as available and efficient targets for raising whatever dollars are needed to fund the gap in revenue projections in the migration from where we are to some form of fundamental corporate tax reform. And so the strategy, I believe, is to get the money out of the firms today before it can be used to fund fundamental corporate reform in the future. And finally, the entire tax planning strategy of all these firms depends on the financial accounting strategy, and that in turn means that firms must convince their auditors that this money is permanently reinvested. Those are the magic words abroad. It is my understanding that firms have so much money now in permanently reinvested firms that some of the financial accounting firms are pushing back and saying that you don't possibly have a use for that money, and so therefore we are now skeptical about your statement that this money will be permanently reinvested outside the United States. And that puts additional pressure on firms to shrink their permanently reinvested balances. So with apologies for going on too long, that's my little party piece.
Great. Thank you very much, Ed. This is Chuck Maher. Good afternoon, everybody. I just want to make five brief points, and we'll turn to your questions. First point is that much in life is uncertain. In policy world, that's particularly true. We don't often know what the effects of policies will be. So I think it's very important to focus on that in this policy, we've done this before. We did it once before in 2000, and it was a failure, right? Every study that's looked at it, disinterested studies, the National Bureau of Economic Research, they found that the holiday did not increase domestic investment, employment, or research and development. Congressional Research Service did a survey of literature, came to the same conclusion. Joint Tax did a survey of literature, came to the same conclusion. So it's very clearly understood that it failed. And beyond that, it was an embarrassing failure. I think many of you who were around remember that the members of Congress, after this was enacted, really were caught with somewhat egg on their face. That right after all the promises were made, after the law was passed, you had some massive layoff announcement from the chief proponents. Hewlett-Packard repatriated $14 billion and laid off 14,000. Pfizer, the biggest repatriator, laid off 10,000. So you really had an embarrassment back then. And there's every reason to believe this time would actually be worse, right? We've had the same issue that it would not provide much of an economic boost, right? Up and down Wall Street, you're getting reports, right? Goldman Sachs last week would not expect a significant change in corporate hiring or investment plans. But Goldman Sachs also makes the point that Ed makes, that they would see, that companies would see a clear pattern here. Holiday after holiday would lead to a cycle where companies would know that they can pile up investments overseas, wait till there's a recession, have a massive lobbying campaign, and get another holiday, and then just repeat the cycle over and over. And the result of that is a change in tax policy that just encourages more and more investment overseas, which is the last thing we need. Picking up also on Ed's point, this being completely unnecessary given the times, that companies are flush with cash. Federal Reserve came out about 10 days ago with the latest data. Companies, the U.S. corporate sector has $2 trillion in liquid assets domestically held. This is a record amount of cash on hand. They're not investing it because of this. We have a demand side problem here, not because of a lack of cash. Fourth point I'd like to make is just to point out that this would be a completely unfair policy, right? You have all these domestic companies who invest in the United States and have paid taxes. They get nothing from this. And finally, just to close out, just a reminder that contrary to what the lobbyists have been saying, this is not a free lunch. This costs real money. This will lead to, joint tax estimates, $80 billion in higher deficits. There's much better ways to spend $80 billion. So before I want to open up the questions, I just want to pick up one point Ed said. I hope that as the debate continues, that you really use that as a resource, because he is the expert on this. And in this town, there is this emerging consensus that territoriality is the way to go, that a zero tax rate on foreign profit is where the United States should head. And I think that is extremely misguided, and I think Ed makes a great point that that basically is repatriation on steroids. And I hope that's one we'll discuss in the call, in the questions, but also come back to in future days.
This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.